a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Well, good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Friday Democratic Press Conference. We especially welcome our young journalists from Washington High School in Sioux Falls, so we're very glad you're here. Please feel free to participate, okay? I'm Bernie Hanef. I'm the Democratic leader in the House, and I'm joined by Jason Frerichs, a Democratic leader in the Senate, and we appreciate this opportunity every week to share some thoughts with the media in general and especially with our friends at South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I want to talk a little bit about something that we don't talk about a lot here in the South Dakota legislature. We don't like to bring up really tough things in South Dakota. It's all this South Dakota nice thing, you know, it's always going to rain, the sun's always shining, and everybody's happy and good-looking. And we don't really like to get into the negative things. But the fact of the matter is, and if you don't talk about the problems, then you don't get them solved. And the fact of the matter is, South Dakota has a poverty problem, and we need to address it. And I've thought for far too long out here, we just kind of pretend it doesn't exist. Poverty, not a word you'd hear very often out here, or the poor. We just don't talk about those things. But a new story came out this week. I'm sure many of you read it, that the South Dakota reservations are the poorest reservations in the United States. I think we already knew, many of us, that we have, I think, 4 of the 10 poorest counties in the United States are here within the borders of South Dakota. And it's not just a rural poverty problem. Anybody who's campaigned for office and campaigned in our 10 or 15 largest cities, if you actually go door to door, and I've said before in this in these press conferences, one of the great things about making legislators run every 2 years is that they have to get out there and campaign door to door, and you see your community in a whole different light. Doors, houses that you would normally drive by, if you actually knock on the door, talk to the folks who live there, you find very quickly that folks are really struggling. I think we also got some evidence of that at the healthcare expansion hearing on Wednesday this week. Totally an unintended consequence of that hearing was that folks who are low-income earners, they're working oftentimes 2 or 3 jobs, working really hard at important jobs for some quite low wages. They're really struggling, and they had a chance to come forward and actually tell their stories. And one fellow especially was especially poignant. Came from Aberdeen. He's committed to the healthcare industry. He works in the healthcare industry. He provides home healthcare services for I forget the wage, but a very low wage. His employer doesn't provide health insurance. He can't afford health insurance at that wage, even though he's in the healthcare industry. The irony there was quite startling. And he was asked appropriate question by a committee member. Well, why don't you just do something about it? Why don't you go do something else? And he very articulately made the point. Look, I do important work. And somebody has to do that work. So if it's not me, somebody else. I mean, and there was story after story from folks who, sometimes doctors and nurses telling stories about patients who did everything right, but, you know, just through no fault of their own, they were just a broken arm or one bad illness away from bankruptcy, and sometimes from a serious illness that was treatable, and because it wasn't treated early, became debilitating, and they ended up in total poverty and on disability, costing us a lot more money. So these things are—it's really great that we're actually having these discussions this year. Last night, the State Chamber of Commerce was here, and there was a big gala dinner, and we all ate really well, and it was wonderful. But to everybody's credit, then we had a conversation about economic development in South Dakota. And it was a much broader economic development discussion than we've had in the past. And in fact, one of the questions from one of the economic development leaders was, you know, how do we really get the focus on the worker and on workforce development? That was really an encouraging thing, because too often in the past it's just been about how can we give the most money away to the biggest corporations and hope it all trickles down. And obviously that's what we've been doing, and it hasn't been working that well in South Dakota. And now last night the discussion was broadened out to talk about how can we actually trickle up, how can we actually really put the focus on the worker. And so I think some really good things are happening. I think Jason and I have found the same thing true as we've talked with our Republican colleagues in trying to come up with an economic development compromise this session. And there are some discussions to try to figure out how we can you know, come up with a package that'll please everybody. And I think we found the same thing is true as we've talked to our Republican colleagues. They really want to broaden the discussion and talk not just about large project incentives for big corporations, but also talk about, you know, housing and creating really good jobs and really targeting rural economic development and doing some of the things that I just don't think have had near enough emphasis in the past. So with 7 weeks into the session, I remain, of course, I'm a South Dakotan, pretty encouraged that maybe we can do some good things yet this session. We've got 2 weeks to get them all finalized, and 2 weeks isn't a lot of time, but on the other hand, in the South Dakota State Legislature, 2 weeks is like a nuclear half-life also. We can do a lot in 2 weeks. With that, I'll turn it over to Jason, and we'll take your questions.
All right. Well, thank you, Bernie. Again, my name is Jason Furix from the Senate side up in District 1 from Wilmot. And as we close out this week, I think most of us probably felt the chance of a little bit of recovery yesterday after the crossover day. Luckily, on the Senate side, we finished a little bit earlier than our friends on the House side. But regardless of that, I think all of us are definitely proud of the fact that we were able to meet our deadlines, be respectful in our discussions, and yet at the same time professional to follow the rules that are set forth and that the people send us out here to take care of and finish our business on time. One of the bills, as we finished our business at the end of the day on crossover day, was Senate Bill 15, which I'm proud of the fact that we did see a fair amount of movement on the Republican side as well, and we as Democrats were in agreement with those folks to be sure and consider the merits of Senate Bill 15 and Senate Bill 28 separate. There was a motion to divide the question, and it just passed with the bare minimum amount of votes to consider those pieces of legislation separate. Senate Bill 28 is the bill that deals with our standard Cutler-Gabriel adjustments based on the valuations for our properties, whether it's ag and non-ag levies. But then back to Senate Bill 15, this is something that we feel as Senate Democrats, and we've certainly forewarned our counterparts on the other side, meaning in the House side, that they will have this legislation coming their way. This Senate Bill 15 raises the property tax mill levies for special education. Now, granted, there's needs that must be met when you look at the amount of local effort and state effort to take care of that specific levy for special education. But at the same time, whenever the local effort is increased, that obviously removes the burden for the state side of things. And even from the information from the Department of Education, I think we were told somewhere in the neighborhood of $4.78 million of state money would be required had this local increase not happened. Kind of ironic at the same day, not that we were following things as closely as possible, but we did keep track of things on the House side. They ended up removing $5 million for Bell Brands and some of those that would have come out of general funds and keep that on the futures fund side of things. And so in terms of having true equity, it happened. It happened on crossover day. Now, again, that's only a snapshot of what we may see down the road here in the next couple of weeks as the budget is completely crafted and becomes a document to work with, which I must say, when you talk on the budget, again, our Democratic appropriators are very proud of the fact that our friends on the Republican side have offered to include them in discussions on possible amendments and really having a all-hands-on-deck approach to crafting that budget. Again, we are very proud of that fact and appreciate their willingness, and obviously we'll continue to do what we can to keep communication open. But just to finish up on Senate Bill 15, this brings up the bigger argument that many of us will see, probably even you could split into two different areas. One area would be when will we reach the point in terms of shifting more of a burden onto our local property taxpayers that either they will revolt in the sense that they're going to become extremely engaged and ask for some answers from state government to realize that we're putting a huge burden on their backs. At the same time, there's discussions that continue to happen about the percentages between our agriculture side and non-agricultural side, which is a fair discussion. Myself, being at the heart of production agriculture, realize that we've had some excellent times here lately, but at the same time, there's emotional levels that are placed on land values, and so we're very proud of the fact that we have the productivity method in place right now to value agricultural property. But I do know, in talking to, again, our friends on the Republican side, that that's an issue that we're lucky enough to have, an Ag Land Assessment Task Force to be a focal point for those discussions and completely vet the public's interest in what they may feel in those areas. So, again, back to property tax and the burden that we place on our local folks, it's definitely not going away. It's right on their minds, and proof of that even goes back to the expansions of capital outlay to use for ongoing expenses that are oftentimes operational. That's something I've been consistently voting against each of the years that it's come up here in the legislature, and not because I don't want to give some options to the schools, but because it obviously veers from the approach that the reason we have capital outlay, which is to take care of essentially the bricks and mortar type of long-term investments. So, with that, we welcome any of your questions. And as Bernie mentioned, it's a treat to have some young folks. They've been in committee and definitely been involved in that process. We also have the Aberdeen leadership folks have been in. They were in yesterday, and they're also here around the Capitol today. So it's been sure fun to have the youthful presence. But any questions?
Victoria, go ahead.
Victoria Wicks with South Dakota Public Radio. Is there any kind of state mandate that that businesses that get a tax break have to provide living wages and health insurance to the workers? And do you know of any that if there is not one, is there anything planned?
It's a discussion we've had out here through the years when we've talked about economic development. There's been no traction for that whatsoever. I've supported that concept, but there's no traction at all and opposed for a lot of different reasons. And I doubt that there will be any mandate if we are able to come up with some kind of an omnibus bill that's very all-encompassing for economic development. I doubt there will be any mandates in there, but I think there will be at least an accountability system so we can better measure the quality of the jobs and whether we're going in the right direction and what the payback is. And there'll be a lot more transparency and accountability so at least we can analyze whether we've made good investments. All you want.
I have to remember what it is now.
While you're thinking, can I add something to that? One other thing, one big thing that South Dakota state government can do to improve wages, and wages are a huge issue, should be a huge issue out here and seldom talked about. In fact, the number recently came before us that there are 180,000 South Dakotans making $11.50 an hour or less in their jobs. That's a third of our workforce, over a third of our workforce. I think our entire workforce is 460,000. Over a third of that workforce makes under $11.50 an hour, some of them far less, many of them state employees or people who are in jobs where the monies come largely from state coffers, jobs dependent on Medicaid, for example, people working in nursing homes and community service providers and health care in what we call adjustment training centers and jobs like that. So the decisions we make out here in the Capitol affect wages to a large degree, and we could do a lot better. We could set a lot better example as the state's major employer on how to treat low income workers. In fact, I think if you go to the Walmart out here in Pierre in the evening, you'll find the place staffed by many, many state workers who work hard all day long in important jobs and earn so little money that they have to go moonlight at night at Walmart. In Yankton, it's the very same thing. We have many state employees in Yankton, and they're paid on average far less than the workers in Pierre, and oftentimes have to moonlight. They hold the state job because it provides some benefits and it provides health insurance that they can't get at other jobs, but that's the only hook. Otherwise, the wages just don't justify it. So we could do a lot better job. We have many state employees who qualify for food stamps. We could do a lot better job setting an example as an employer, and that's something we could do ourselves right here within this building.
Okay. I remembered my question. Do you know if the Affordable Care Act is going to give relief to employers who are required to give insurance benefits, and how it will affect the employers who currently don't offer insurance benefits?
And I don't mean to dominate, but I'm an employer, and I've studied that pretty closely because I'm an employer who provides health insurance, and it sure does. I mean, the Affordable Care Act isn't perfect, and it's going to take lots of tweaking as anything that size would. But the more I see it, the smarter it actually looks, and it's there are a lot of really good elements to it, especially for small businesses, and that's what we're mostly all about in South Dakota, is small business. For small employers like me, there are two ways it's going to help. First of all, I think it's going to help cap the increases that we've had. I just had a 26% increase in my policy for my employees, 26% increase for reasons that will no longer be valid under the new when the Affordable Care Act takes place. So it's going to help in helping us to gain more competition in the marketplace for insurance, and it's going to limit reasons why they can increase your policies. That's going to be one thing. The second way it helps, it actually provides subsidies. I think a 25% subsidy for small businesses like mine, which is a big, big help, although that 25% subsidy is eaten up in 1 year by that 26% increase. So I think it's going to help mostly in helping us to not be captive to one company, and through the new exchanges, we'll be able to actually compare policies. And you would have to be have to doctorate in insurance actuary. I don't know if there is such doctors, but you'd have to have a doctorate in something to even be able to compare policies in the past. And now through the health exchanges, you'll actually be able to, you know, pick from a menu of policies, and that's going to be a big step forward.
Again, if there's any questions on the line, press #6 to unmute your line, and then *6 to mute it again.
Please, and come up to a microphone if you would, please.
All right, Jack Noctegal, journalism student at Sioux Falls, Washington. My question is, how do South Dakota lawmakers begin to address the economic issues on the reservations?
I can start, even though Bernie's well-versed in this also. But, you know, that's an issue that is very difficult for any of us to relate to the realities that happen. Even myself, I live just a couple of miles off the Sistan-Wahpeton Oyate Reservation. I regularly do business in and out of the communities that are in the Sistan-Wahpeton Oyate. You know, how do we address the issue? It's still obviously, as we hear many of our, Native American legislators remind us, it comes from the youth on the reservation of who we can instill and obviously give an element of pride to those young people. So it obviously has to come from within. At the same time, if you look at what has happened in typical or traditional policies, whether you look at government policies from a federal perspective, and for that matter, even on a state level, the odds have been stacked against them. We've not only isolated where the reservation's at, they're on some of the poorest ground and almost in the sense that they aren't close enough to typical commerce that may happen out there. So, again, they start off right away with a disadvantage. Aside from anything else that may happen, I think from our perspective as lawmakers, what we need to continue to do, and I have great respect for our Tribal Relations Secretary, J.R. LaPlante, who is very willing to communicate and be involved wherever possible. But we obviously have to continue to listen, but we also have to be willing to take a risk and give those folks a chance. And that's something that stems even from last night at our economic development discussions with the business folks. As the majority leader mentioned, even on the Ready Fund, it's a very frugal type of lending effort. How can we look for many other options to take risks with these folks? I would not be a farmer right now had I not been willing to take huge risks, especially during my college years when I got into the cattle business. And so when we look at these young people on the reservations, they do have various resources, especially if you look at, again, it's poor land, but they still have a wide array of land that we have to be willing to take risks with those folks and still pride that they can, you know, that they are worth something. So that's, you know, kind of my approach. We've seen how they've been able to work on various gaming projects that have proven to be successful. Whether, you know, the whole gaming issue came up, of course, at the recent press conference we had here down in Oklahoma for some of their possible expansion. But that has been one area where they've looked from within to address some of their needs. But, you know, I hope that you'll get the chance to ask that question to my friend Senator Maher, because he lives and works in the reservation just to the west and north of here. So,
I would just add, are you Ralph's grandson?
Yeah.
Oh, very good. Ralph's one of the great journalists in South Dakota. I could tell a story about him, but we don't have time, so I won't. So, ask me later if you don't know it. Real quickly, I would just say on economic development for our friends in the Native American community, Jason hit it right on the head. It's really going to come down to two things, education and entrepreneurship, I believe. And the education factor has improved a lot in the last generation. The tribal colleges have provided amazing leadership. And in the 25 or 30 years that I've been traveling around the reservations through South Dakota Magazine, more than as a legislator, I mean, the tribal colleges are just making a profound difference in reservation communities. And so we're in the right step there. The other thing is entrepreneurship, and there again, there are groups like the Lakota Fund and various groups that are really encouraging entrepreneurship. There is just no tradition of entrepreneurship on the reservations. They have been a very socialistic environment. And I think entrepreneurship is a real key to success out there, and there's some really good steps being taken. We need to support them here on the state level as much as we can.
Further questions?
Any students first? Let's check online.
If there's any questions online, again, press #6 to unmute your line and then *6 to mute it again.
If not, I've got a bill in committee. I would run one more chance on the students, and we'll go.
Got the school sentinel bill up in state affairs now at 10.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Dems press conference. The Republicans will be following shortly at 10 o'clock.